Welcome to the Great Detectives of Old Time Radio. From Boise, Idaho, this is your host, Adam Graham. Got a comment? Send it to me, box13 at greatdetectives.net. Cast your vote for the show on Podcast Alley, podcastalley.greatdetectives.net. And call the show, 208-991-GREAT-D. That's 208-991-4783. And if nothing else, you can call and listen to the voicemail message. It's my interpretation of the beginning of Philip Marlowe. Well, I got an email from Jeff regarding the Paramount Theater. He writes, "Please, not only is the episode introduced as from the Paramount Theater in Hollywood, but previous episodes have discussed the speeder theater specifically in relation to war bond drives. The Paramount is still a going concern, opened in 1926 and remodeled and reopened in 1941. A lovely place, and would be fun to watch a Rathbone Bruce Holmes movie on its screen." Well, I did look, it's kind of difficult just because of just because there are so many different theaters, plus there was a court ruling that forced some of the movie companies to get rid of their theaters. But I think I have found the location, and it looks like it's on Melrose Avenue there in Los Angeles. And it does look like a pretty interesting place to watch a movie, and it has been open for some time. So thanks for the clarification on that. Got a comment from Murph, who writes, "It was a real pleasure to hear Rathbone doing a few lines from the magnificent Agincourt speech. The only issue I had was that he did so little of it." That's one thing to remember about Basil Rathbone. His first love really was the theater. And he did several episodes. One show he did quite a few guest appearances on was Theater Guild on the Air. Most of his performances for Theater Guild on the Air have unfortunately been lost. Some of the ones that were lost were Julius Caesar, That Winslow Boy, and Lo and Behold. So he was a big lover of the theater. It was his first love. And after he found out he'd been typecast as Sherlock Holmes, that's when he went back to. So I think he really enjoyed that episode. Harry Bartell, we promised we were going to talk a little bit about him next week. He was actually a very important figure in radio. We've talked about Virginia Gregg and her sheer number of roles. Well, Harry Bartell actually had a total of 10,000 radio appearances. Digital Deli breaks it down. 180 appearances on Gunsmoke, 60 appearances in Escape, 15 in The Adventures of Philip Marlowe, 30-plus in Dragnet, 20-plus in Let George Do It, 45 on Suspense, 120 episodes in Johnny Dollar, and 60-plus episodes in Have Gun Will Travel. So he's appeared in a lot of shows we've listened to, are listening to, and a couple other on the old-time Radio Daily Westerns. Bartell made some television appearances. Perhaps most famous, he did in the 1950s Dragnet. He played the priest in the Christmas episode. Beyond that, in his later days, he was one of those radio actors who did remain around and was an active participant and made himself readily available to the old-time radio community. Went to a lot of conventions. he hosted a few sets. I think he even did a radio show of old-time radio shows. So a very versatile actor joining the cast here, and we're going to hear him. We probably heard him already, and I just have not mentioned it. But we're going to hear him a lot as we listen to this radio. He's one of those voices that absolutely just made radio work. I did find the story of how Harry Bartell got his job on Sherlock Holmes. And this comes from Vintage Radio Place. One of his friends writes, Harry told, he said he literally walked into the announcer's role on Sherlock Holmes. That was the reason I got that job, a fluke. That he had a huge audition, and every name announcer in town was over at CBS. I walked into the foyer, and I couldn't understand what was going on. I asked the secretary. She said Edna Best was conducting an audition for the announcer on Sherlock Holmes. I said, may I go in and say hello? I'd worked with her as an actor. I said, hi, Edna, and started to leave. She said, aren't you going to read? As long as you're here, pick up the script and read. And that's how I got the job. We'll also hear Bartell later on as the longest-lasting Archie Goodwin on Nero Wolfe. Made it through 10 episodes. May not sound like an accomplishment now, but when we get into Nero Wolfe, you'll understand. We have some good commentary coming up after the show. But before we get into the show, I do want to just encourage you, if you like Sherlock Holmes, I know what else you'll like, Netflix. Netflix allows you to sample a wide variety of Holmes films. You can watch all 12 of the Rathbone Bruce movies right in your home. You can get Jeremy Brett's ITV version. And you can even get the spoofs. Sherlock Holmes in every form imaginable, available to you to watch, along with all your other favorite classics, at a reasonable price that you can afford, starting at as little as $9 a month for unlimited streaming and unlimited movies. Just go to greatdetectives.net, click on the Netflix link, and you can try it out free for 2 weeks, or go to netflix.greatdetectives.net. Now we're going to get into Harry Bartell's premiere episode on Sherlock Holmes, The Limping Ghost. We'll go ahead and we'll listen, and then we'll come back.
Petri Wine brings you Basil Rathbone and Nigel Bruce in the new adventures of Sherlock Holmes. The Petri family, the family that took time to bring you good wine, invite you to listen to Dr. Watson tell us another of his fascinating stories about his old friend, that master detective, Sherlock Holmes. You know, we're really happy to be back with you once again, and we're looking forward to getting together at this time every week from here on out. And I hope you won't mind if every once in a while I sort of get a word in edgewise about Petri wines. You know, and I really mean this, Petri wines are wonderful wines. For instance, right now, I wish I could give you a glass of Petri California Port. You could hold that Petri Port up to the light and look at its clear, deep red color. You could smell that luscious grape aroma. And best of all, you could taste that Petri Port. What a flavor. That Petri Port just sort of rolls around on your tongue, and oh boy, is that ever good. Try Petri Port after dinner some evening, or try it when some friends drop in. You can serve it proudly because, after all, the name Petri is the proudest name in the history of American wines. And now let's look in on our good friend Dr. Watson and see if he's expecting us.
Come in, Mr. Bartell. You're just the man I've been expecting.
How are you, Dr. Watson? It's good to see you again.
Thank you, my boy. It's very nice to see you again, too. I've missed our Monday night visits during the last 3 months. Sit yourself down. Would you care to join me in a glass of port?
Well, thanks, Doctor. That'd be nice. You know, it seems to me after our summer vacation, a toast to the great Sherlock Holmes would be in order.
That's an excellent idea. Here you are, young fellow.
Thanks. You propose the toast, Doctor.
To Sherlock Holmes, master detective and loyal friend, whose adventures have brought considerable, shall we say, fame to a certain retired doctor now living in Northern California.
I'll drink to that.
Well, now, suppose I might as well get on with tonight's story.
Which particular adventure have you selected, Doctor?
One that I call The Limping Ghost.
Sounds exciting. And, as usual, you find me saying, How did it begin?
In Baker Street on a windy December evening at the turn of the century. A young, white-faced boy sat in front of our blazing fire. And as he told us his strange story, the flickering firelight danced weird patterns on the walls. The young man was Alexander McMorris, the 7th Earl of Lochnair.
The Earl of Lochnair? Say, didn't I read in the papers the other day that the 8th Earl of Lochnair had been killed in an airplane accident?
Quite right, my boy. Even in this day and age, the tragic history of violent death seems to dog the footsteps of the Lochnair family. But to return to my story. On that December night in 1900, we heard the whole history of the limping ghost of Lochnair. The first Earl had lost a foot at the Battle of Flodden Field in 1513. In spite of this terrible handicap, he fought on valiantly until he died on the battlefield from loss of blood. From then on, right until the time this story begins, the limping ghost, clad in a suit of armor, always appeared at Lochnair Castle before and after the death of the current Earl. Yes, Mr. Bartell, it was a strange story that Sherlock Holmes and I listened to that night. A story of death and horror over the centuries, punctuated by the limping clank of ghostly armor.
Milady, I have terrible news for you. Your husband, the Earl, was killed in the explosion, destroyed Lord Darnley.
Milady, the Guy Fawkes plan to guard the House of Parliament has failed. Your husband is in the Tower of London. They say he's to be hanged, drawn, and quartered.
Madam, I regret to inform you that your husband, on my instructions, has been arrested for murder. I have no doubt that he will hang.
And that's the story of the Lochnairs, Mr. Holmes. You were instrumental in sending my great-uncle to the gallows, a fate which he richly deserved, I'm told. So it seemed only natural to come here to Baker Street and consult you now that I'm in trouble.
I shall be most happy to do anything I can to help you, sir.
I don't remember anything about your sending the Earl of Lochnair to the scaffold, Holmes.
Well, he did, Dr. Watson.
Mm-hmm.
And the servants have always sworn the ghost really did walk at midnight on the day that he was hanged.
Indeed. Now, sir, I suggest that you tell us what problem brought you here.
The ghost is walking again, Mr. Holmes. You know what that means.
According to the legend, that the present Earl will die.
Exactly. And as I'm the present Earl, you can see why I'm rather worried.
Am I to understand that you've actually seen this ghost yourself?
Yes, Mr. Holmes. The night before last, Betty, well, that is, Miss Nolan and I, were sitting in the dining hall in front of the fire when we heard a strange sound up in the musicians' gallery. We looked up and in the moonlight saw a ghostly figure in armor limping towards the staircase.
Oh, gracious me. My dear sir, you're certain that you really saw it? Moonlight can play strange tricks, you know.
There wasn't any doubt about it, Doctor. We both saw and heard it.
What did you do?
I started to go towards the stairs, but as I did so, Betty screamed and then tumbled to the floor in a heap.
Mm. Fainted, I suppose.
Yes. While I was reviving her, the ghost disappeared.
Who's staying with you at Lochnair Castle at the moment?
Well, there's Betty Nolan. She's the sister of James Nolan. He looks after my estate. Betty and I are engaged to be married.
Oh,
yes, indeed. Anyone else staying with you?
Yes, a distant cousin of mine, Jed K. McMorris, an American. He turned up in England a couple of months ago with his son, Walter. They're both with me at the present.
A distant cousin.
That's right, Mr. Holmes. Actually, the descendants of a more than usually black sheep branch of the family. I don't know how long the old man's going to be with us, though. If you ask me, he's a dying man.
How do you say that, sir?
As far as I can gather, he's been wasting away for years. It's only a question of time before his strength fails him entirely. I was hoping perhaps you could take a look at him, Dr. Watson. That is, if I could persuade you and Mr. Holmes to come and stay at the castle for a few days.
Well, what about it, Holmes?
It's an intriguing problem, Watson. The current Earl of Lochnair would seem to be in danger. A cousin of his is dying of an obscure disease, and the ghost of Lochnair Castle is walking again. Yes, it's an irresistible invitation. I see no reason why we can't leave on the Scotch Express tonight. Been quite a heavy fall of snow here in your absence, young man.
Quite so. Judging from the color of the sky, there's more to come.
Very angry looking.
Oh, now, as we're round this bend, you'll be able to see the castle. Ah, yes. There you are, gentlemen.
Magnificent.
Yes, it's a fine place, all right, Doctor, though it costs me a great deal in upkeep. Matter of fact, I only have one wing open. It's always been something of a problem to get servants to come and live here. See, the local villagers have a great respect for the Loch Nair ghost, you know.
What servants do you have at the castle at present?
A cook housekeeper, Mrs. McClintock, fine old lady who's been with me for 6 years now. And then there's old Tammas. He served my family for as long as I can remember. Well, as a matter of fact, he is now. Hello, Tammas.
I'm glad to see you back, my lord, and that's a fact.
Oh, thank you, Tammas. Oh, these gentlemen are Mr. Sherlock Holmes, Dr. Watson.
Good day to you, gentlemen.
Good day, Thomas, good day.
Before I get the trap round to the stables, I may as well break the news to you.
Yes, what's happened, Tammas?
It's your cousin, my lord. Poor old Mr. McMorris, he's dead.
What?
Died early this morning. God rest his soul.
Dead?
Well, I'm very sorry that I arrived too late to be of any help.
Well, thank you for telling me, Tammas. Oh, you may take the trap round now.
Aye, sir. I'll bring the baggage with me.
So he's dead. Well, I can't say it's unexpected, but it is a shock, nevertheless.
I'm sure that it must be, particularly as you yourself told us you saw the ghost of Loch Nair the night before last.
In which case...
In which case, Watson, I think we may reasonably expect another visitation. Perhaps before the night is over. Shall we go in?
This is Miss Nolan, my fiancée, Mr. Sherlock Holmes, and Dr. Watson.
I'm very glad to meet you.
How are you, sir?
And this is her brother, James Nolan, the manager of my estate.
How do you do, sir?
How are you, Mr. Nolan?
Much better for seeing you both up here. I'm sure it won't take you long to lay this ghost business by the heel.
Well, I trust you don't overestimate our abilities, Mr. Nolan.
Alec, you've heard about your cousin, of course.
Oh, yes, my dear. Tammas told us as we drove up. Where's Walter?
He went into the village with the doctor and... the body of his father. Oh. He should be back soon.
How's he taking it?
Very quietly.
Too quietly, if you ask me. Those Americans are pretty demonstrative people, you know. And Walter's been no exception. But he behaved very strangely this morning. When the doctor told him his father was dead, he just said, now things will start to happen, and then shut up like an oyster. I can't make head or tail of the fellow.
Yes, quite so, quite so. Mr. Holmes, I expect you and Dr. Watson would like to go to your room.
Yes, I must confess.
I think first I'd like to take a look at the musician's gallery, if you don't mind.
Oh, yes, of course. Would you excuse us, darling?
All right, Alan.
It's in the dining hall here.
They must have been very hospitable people in those days. 50 or 60 people could eat at that table.
Yes, Doctor. Needless to remark, we hardly ever use the room nowadays. There's the musician's gallery, Mr. Holmes.
Oh, yes, yes, I see. How do we get up there?
I'll show you. See, there's a stone staircase behind this tapestry here. Follow me. Watch your step. It's quite narrow, rather dark.
Watch your head, Watson, old chap.
Oh, don't worry about me, Holmes. I'm perfect. Oh, I say. Must have built these stairs for pygmies.
Oh, yes. Here we are, gentlemen. This is the musician's gallery.
By Jove. It must have made a pretty picture in the days gone by. A little string orchestra fiddling away up here and some below the Scottish nobility bobbing and floating round in the intricacies of a Highland chatiche or a stately gavotte or something.
Where does that door lead to?
To the bedroom wing.
And that's where the ghost appeared from the other night, I suppose.
Yes, Mr. Holmes.
Uh-huh.
The door's ajar. Do you generally keep this door unlocked, sir?
Why, no. But the key mysteriously disappeared about a week ago. James is having a new one made, so I must remind him about that.
Alec!
Oh, we're up here, Walter. We're coming down. That's Walter McMorris. My dead cousin's son.
Poor fellow, this must be a dreadful day for him.
Yes, I'm afraid this is going to be a rather painful interview. Oh, hello, Walter. This is Mr. Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson.
How do you do, sir?
How do you do?
Sherlock Holmes, sir. I've heard about you and your friend, Dr. Watson.
Walter, old man, I'm dreadfully sorry about your father.
Are you now? Isn't that nice of you? Well, you'll be sorry enough when you hear that I'm going to take you to court and prove that I'm the real Earl of Loch Nair.
Walter, you're out of your mind.
Am I? No. Father was out of his because he kept quiet all these years. But I'm going to have my rights. I've looked up the records. I've had genealogists working for months. And I've got all the facts that prove you're an imposter.
Oh, man, what are you talking about?
You know well enough. When Sherlock Holmes here sent your great-uncle to the gallows 20 years ago, the title and estate should have come to my father. When I leave here tomorrow, I'm going straight to the finest lawyer in London.
Man, if you believe this, why have you said nothing about it till now?
Because I'm smart. I found out a thing or two since I've been staying here. And one of the things I found out is that your precious fiancée and her brother wouldn't look twice at you if it weren't for your money and the title.
Shut up.
You'll find out. She's a smart little filly, and she knows what kind of a track she's running.
You jack!
My compliments, sir. A very professional uppercut.
Yes, and a very well-deserved one.
Hi.
Offensive scoundrel.
Sorry about this. Please don't say anything in front of Betty. It'll only upset her.
I quite understand. Come along, Watson. Let's go and find our rooms.
Holmes, it's nearly dinner time. Why are we wandering about here in the dark instead of having a glass of sherry with the others in the library?
I'm a conscientious practitioner, Watson. I like to earn my fees. It occurred to me that a further examination of this dining hall might prove profitable.
Well, personally, Holmes, I think you're wasting your time on this case.
What makes you think that, old chap?
It's perfectly obvious that young American fellow was impersonating the ghost a few nights ago. He knew his father was going to die, and he wanted to build up the legend so as to make his own claim seem more believable.
Well, that's very sound reasoning, Watson. Though to be logical in his deception, he should repeat the performance now that his father is dead.
Well, ghosts only walk at midnight, so why don't we go and have a glass of sherry?
Shh.
What is it, Holmes?
Someone's coming in from the library. The lighted candle.
Yes? Who is it?
It's me, Mrs. McClintock.
Oh, gracious me, you gave me quite a start.
I heard voices and I knew the candles were not alight in here, so I came in to see who it was. You're watching for the ghost, I suppose. Well, you'll no be disappointed, gentlemen, though you may see more than you bargain for. Those that meddle with ghostly things they do not comprehend are playing with something much more dangerous than fire. Fire burns, but the shades on dead people...
Holmes, Holmes, look up there in the gallery! The door's opening. It's the ghost.
Aye, here he comes, the poor buddy. See the armor on him, and the way he's dragging one leg behind him.
Yes, it's really quite an effective impersonation. And the twilight provides most appropriate light for his play acting, too.
You mean it's the young American?
Of course, obviously.
Look, look behind him. There's another figure.
Yes, dressed in the same kind of armor and carrying a sword. King's afoot, Watson.
The ghost has seen him. He's turning. The second figure's raising his sword.
Look out!
Great heavens! He's knocked him through the railings. That must be a 20-foot fall.
Come on, old fellow. Help me open his visor.
Just a minute.
Yes. It's Walter McMorris, the American. Though from the angle of his head, I would suggest that it might be the late Walter McMorris. Eh, Watson?
He's dead, all right, Holmes. Neck broken.
Meanwhile, the second figure has been able to slip back through that door and escape us. Come on, he was dressed in armor. He can't go very fast. Perhaps we can overtake him.
Dr. Watson's story will continue in just a few seconds, which is all the time I need to tell you about Petri California Muscatel. Ever try Petri Muscatel? It's a wine that looks like sheer gold. And it's made from big, plump, juicy muscat grapes. Boy, pop one of those muscat grapes into your mouth and you know you've got something delicious. You know that. And you get the same flavor in Petri Muscatel. It's a perfect wine to serve a lady. Women love it. And that best time to serve it is after dinner or on a Sunday afternoon, you know, times like that. But just make sure it's Petri Muscatel, because that's the way to make sure it's going to be good. Remember, Petri. And now back to tonight's new Sherlock Holmes adventure and the story of the limping ghost of Loch Nair.
Confound it, Holmes. There's no trace of the ghost in the magician's gallery.
You gave him too much of a start, I'm afraid.
Of course you didn't find him. You'll never find him because he's not mortal.
Mrs. McClintock, is the original suit of armor, the one worn by the first Earl of Loch Nair, still in the castle?
Aye, sir. It's in the library through that door there. I'll take you to it.
Don't bother, thank you. We'll find it. Come on, Watson. Bring that candle with you.
Right, Joe, Holmes.
If you know what's good for you, you'll stop dabbling in it as your dinner really can.
Holmes, what do you make of the second girl?
An imposter, obviously.
But who could it have been?
That's what we have to find out, old chap. Undoubtedly someone knew that the American Walter McMorris was impersonating the ghost and used this macabre method to kill him.
But why kill him?
Possibly his claims to the title and estate were valid. Or perhaps some fanatic was so devoted to the Loch Nair legend that he assumed the role of ghost and killed him for his sacrilege. Hold the candle a little higher, will you, old chap?
Yeah. Hello. Here's a suit of armor, Holmes. Lying in a heap on the floor.
Oh, on the floor, eh? Whereas it obviously belongs on that stand over there.
It's perfectly clear what's happened. The second figure used this armor and slipped it back in here while we were examining the dead man.
Possibly, Watson, possibly. At least this armor gives us a definite clue. But it limits the field of possible suspects.
How do you mean, Holmes?
Well, it's an interesting fact that the human race has grown definitely larger in the past 400 years. Very few modern men can wear authentic ancient armor like this. For example, take the first item on the top of the heap lying on the floor here. These gauntlets of chain mail. Try them on.
Well, much too small for
exactly.
me.
Either you nor I could have worn this suit.
No, nor could young Nolan, the estate agent.
Whereas his sister could have done.
Yes, so could Thomas the Butler. He's a small fellow.
And if it comes to that, Watson, our distinguished client, the young Earl of Loch Nair, is himself a small man.
Right, you're so he is. And he might easily have had a motive. Young McMorris had disputed his right to the title earlier in the day.
But we mustn't jump to conclusions. Nevertheless, you see what valuable evidence this arm has become.
Hello, it sounds as if the rest of the party are on the scene.
Yes, I suggest that we join them without making any reference to the suit of armor. Remember, old chap, one of them in there is a murderer. And we may have to set a trap to catch him.
Are you sure he's dead, Dr. Watson?
There's no doubt about it. His neck was broken instantly by the fall.
It's dreadful. Father and son both dying on the same day.
And you said the real ghost came up behind him, Mr. Holmes, and struck him so they crashed through the railing up there.
I said another figure dressed in armor killed him, Mr. Nolan.
It was a real ghost. I saw him with my own two eyes. He killed that man for trying to bring shame on the name of Loch Nair.
Shouldn't we get in touch with the police?
How can I get a message to them tonight? Have you looked outside? We're almost completely snowed in.
Snowed in? Oh, Alex, I'm frightened.
Now, hush, darling. There's nothing to be afraid of anymore.
No, at least we have the assurance that the ghost will not limp again.
Why?
Well, the murderer has no further motive for impersonating the ghost. To walk now would be to support the dead American's claims. No. We shall spend a quiet night, and tomorrow I shall communicate with the proper authorities as to my quite definite notions regarding the murderer's identity.
But if the ghost should walk again, Mr. Holmes?
Well, then, sir, I shall know that at last I've encountered a truly supernatural crime and shall retire from the practice of detection.
It's nearly 2 o'clock. You still over there at the window, puffing away that pipe of yours? You know, I can't help feeling that young McMorris knows a great deal more than he told us. A great deal more. The shifty look about him I don't like. Never did trust a fellow who couldn't look you squarely in the eye. Don't you feel the same way, Holmes? Holmes? Holmes, where are you? Holmes!
Shh, Black Watson.
Where have you been? I thought you were over there by the window. Been talking to myself.
Never mind that, old chap. Get yourself on in the dressing gown. We're on the last lap of this strange eventful tragedy.
Oh, thank the Lord for that. Perhaps I can get some sleep. Holmes, where have you been?
I went to the musician's gallery and baited the trap. Now it's ready to spring. Don't dawdle, Watson. Come on.
I'm not dawdling. What do you mean you baited a trap?
You'll see for yourself in a few moments. As a matter of fact, I really baited it when I said downstairs that if real ghosts should walk again, I would retire from the practice of detection.
I didn't understand your saying that myself.
Well, I was tempting the murderer to show his hand once more. Come on, please.
Where are we going?
To wait behind the curtain at the foot of the stairs leading to the musician's gallery. And I hope we don't have to wait very long.
Holmes. I'm getting a crick in my neck trying to peer through this wretched curtain. How much longer do we have to wait?
Until our murderer arrives.
You certain you'll come?
Not certain, but hopeful. Extremely hopeful.
You know who it is, don't you?
Yes. But my proof is too thin for a court of law. I must catch him in the act.
Here he comes.
Splendid.
Let's go up and grab him.
No. They walk into my trap.
He's coming towards the head of stairs. Quick, start!
Exactly. A simple piece of wire stretched across the gallery is remarkably effective, even with ghosts. Come on, son. Help me off with this visor.
There we are. Good Lord, it's James Nolan.
Exactly.
What happened?
You walked into a simple trap, my friend. I'm afraid the next trap will be more lethal, for it will undoubtedly prove to be the one beneath the gallows.
Now that we're headed back for London, Holmes, perhaps you'll settle one or two points in the case that are bothering me quite a bit.
With pleasure, my dear chap. What are they?
I still don't see what Nolan's motive was in murdering the American.
Oh, that should be obvious. He wanted to ensure that his sister's fiancé would enjoy undisputed title to the name of the States.
Well, how did you know it was Nolan?
When I examined the authentic suit of armor. You see, it was obvious it had never been worn.
But I still don't quite understand.
Oh, come now, old chap. The suit of armor was in a heap on the floor.
Yeah?
And if it had been hastily discarded and get, the gauntlets were on top of the pile, you remember?
Well, that's right, they were.
If the suit had really been worn, the gauntlets would have been the first things to have been taken off, and so would have been underneath the pile. Hmm? Obviously, therefore, the armor had been disarranged in order to make people believe the real ghost had walked. After the American's death, the suspects were four. Miss Nolan, her brother, Thomas, the butler, and the Earl himself. Well, I ruled out Mrs. Patinta because, you remember, she was standing behind us at the time of the murder.
Well, I'm beginning to understand. All the suspects except Nolan were small enough to have worn the armor.
That's right. Therefore, only he could have pretended to use it.
Pretended? But he did use it.
Oh, no, my dear fellow. Undoubtedly, he procured a similar one of modern manufacture.
An amazing case, Holmes.
An interesting one, at any rate. And once again, old fellow, I'm forcibly reminded of an old Scottish litany.
Scottish litany? Which one's
that? Oh, you remember it. From ghoulies and ghosties and long-legged beasties and things that go bump in the night. Good Lord, deliver us.
Well, Doctor, that's really a swell story. You know, for a while there, I was beginning to believe in ghosts.
Well, I'm ashamed to admit it, but at the time, so was I.
You know, this sounds silly, but I bet it would be fun to be one of those legendary English ghosts. You know, go around sticking your nose into everybody's business and playing practical jokes like mad and nobody able to figure out who did it. That would really be fun in a way.
Well, you can go around scaring people all you want to, but not for me. I think a ghost leads a terrible life. So, for instance, a ghost can't have the pleasure of eating a nice, juicy steak.
Yeah, or drinking a glass of really good wine.
Ah, now you're talking, young fellow, my lad.
Petri wine.
Yeah, still talking. Uncle.
You see, when I say good wine, I always mean Petri wine, because you can depend on Petri.
I know.
Why, the Petri family has been making wine for generations, handing on down from father to son, all their skill and knowledge and experience. When you realize they started the Petri business way back in the 1800s, well, common sense tells you the Petri family knows practically all there is to know about the fine art of turning luscious grapes into clear, fragrant wine. Yep, whether you're looking for a swell wine to serve before dinner or with dinner or after dinner, for any occasion, you just can't go wrong with a Petri wine, because Petri took time to bring you good wine. Now, Doctor, what story are you going to tell us next week?
Well, now, next week, Mr. Bartell, I'm going to tell you a strange adventure that Holmes and I had in the English countryside. It concerns the apparent madness of a certain Colonel Warburton and the puzzling mystery of two dead dogs.
Tonight's Sherlock Holmes adventure is written by Dennis Green and Anthony Boucher and is based on an incident in the Sir Arthur Conan Doyle story, The Crooked Man. Mr. Rathbone appears through the courtesy of Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer and Mr. Booth through the courtesy of Universal Pictures, where they are now starring in the Sherlock Holmes series. The Petri Wine Company of San Francisco, California, invites you to tune in again next week, same time, same station.
Oh, the Petri family took the time to bring you such good wine. So when you eat and when you cook, remember Petri wine.
To make good food taste better, remember
Pet. Petri.
This is Harry Bytel saying goodnight for the Petri family. Sherlock Holmes comes to you from our Hollywood studios. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
Welcome back. You know, it's a bit hazardous to take a guess at voices if they're not specifically in the credits. I've had some situations where people have guessed wrong, and so I try to avoid it. But I got to tell you, it sounds like Mr. Bartell, on his first day on the job, pulled some double duty playing the American cousin in the Sherlock Holmes episode. Now, that's economy. I do think this episode does sound a little better. After a few months off, both Rathbone and Bruce sound better. The scripts sound better. I think the writers definitely needed that summer off they took. And so I'm going to be looking forward to better episodes. This was a pretty nice mystery, though Holmes kind of tricked the audience, which isn't playing clean for a detective, but it's Sherlock Holmes played by Basil Rathbone. We'll let him get away with it. Special thanks to Penny, who put a $1 tip in the old tip jar. Thank you so much. And that's over at greatdetectives.net. And I have a comment from Leanna. I forgot to read last week, but she writes regarding the Purloined Ruby episode. Enjoying the show immensely. I get up early every morning just so I can download the program and sync up my iPod. Keep up the good work. By the way, there is a polka.wine. It's a Riesling made in California. I get it when I can't find the one I usually get. Oh, thanks so much. I'd commented on polka dot wines, and turns out there is one. Another comment, this one from Podcast Alley. Great show. Keep up the good work. I enjoy your commentary, the shows, and even the Petri wine commercials. It adds to the experience. And just a nice, great show comment from Podcast Alley. Got a nice review on iTunes from Lulu the Penguin. I found this while looking for old-time radio shows a while back and subscribed on a whim. I'm glad I did. Adam is so dedicated, you can tell. And even if his voice gets a bit grating at times and he seems to stutter quite a bit, I find his commentary very insightful. I especially love Box 13 and Sherlock Holmes. I look forward to each new episode, and it makes me wish I'd been alive in the time of radio shows. I've convinced some of my friends at school to listen to this too, and my dad. I'm sure they'll love it as much as I do. Keep up the great work, Adam, and I love your Dragnet podcast too. Well, thank you very much. Regarding Casey Crime Photographer, a topic in recent weeks, and I actually posted a remark that I was kind of surprised of how popular Casey is. William writes in, it took me a few listens, but the show grows on you. It's no Nightbeat, my personal favorite, but it can be entertaining. Well, I'm looking forward to it, and Nightbeat is another great show. And that's what's nice. One thing, I try to be a little bit flexible. I know that Randy Stone isn't technically a detective, he's a reporter, but most of his cases involve some mystery and similar plots to the detective stories, so that's definitely one I'm going to look forward to bringing you when that time comes. But we're going to go ahead and wrap up this week's episode of Sherlock Holmes. Got any comments, send it to me, box13 at greatdetectives.net. Cast your vote for the show on Podcast Alley, podcastalley.greatdetectives.net. And you can now follow the show on Twitter, @Radio Detectives. From Boise, Idaho, this is your host, Adam Graham, signing off.